The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes. Oh, push the button. 73rd show, you think I'd learn? Nope. It's Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. It's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast, 10:02 p.m. in Louisiana, where Jennifer Oliver O'Connell is coming from, and also 10:02 p.m. in Ilhan Omar's district here in Northeast Minneapolis. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters Tonight. This is show 73, and I just realized, just 30 seconds of being on the air today, it's my father's, or would have been my father's, 120th birthday today. Now, you're wondering, why does a guy so freaking handsome like me have a father's 120 years old? Well, he had me when he was 52. That's the reason. So it's been an unusual thing because I have a lot of first cousins. They're basically all 20, 25 years older than I am because of that. So we're kind of a different generations. But yeah, Dad, wherever you are, take care of yourself. He passed in 1989. Okay, so what do you want to know? So tonight we got on the big shoe, we have the dynamic duo, Jennifer Oliver O'Connell from RedState.com and AsAGirlTurns.com and Jeff Meyer from Conk.com. Although Jeff has not shown up yet, which is not like him, but he's not waiting. But I'm sure he'll come up sooner or later. That's tonight. Tomorrow night, big show. Wake the neighbors, bring the kids. Stan Gordon, famous UFO investigator, is going to be joining us. He'll be here. I'm really looking forward to this. Now, we had to book this months ahead of time. This guy's very, very popular. He's very well known. His claim to fame, I've said this before, but it bears repeating. His claim to fame is he lived in Kettysburg. He was 17 years old in December 1965 when the strange thing crashed in Kettysburg, Pennsylvania, which got him started on this, basically a lifelong journey of doing this. It's his full-time job now. He gives lectures, all sorts of stuff. He was 17 years old. Kettysburg is a small town about 30 miles southwest of Pittsburgh. And about 5,000 people live there to this day. Not very big. And this thing crashed in the forest outside of town there. And the military always said it was a meteor. But people in town saw it, and it was definitely not a meteor. As a matter of fact, the military ended up putting it on a flatbed truck, and they put a tarp over it, and they hauled it away. So, and that got him started on this whole thing. And now he spends a lot of his time investigating Bigfoot sightings, and he's written on numerous books. Anyway, we're going to talk to him about that. That's tomorrow. Next week, we got on Tuesday, Ed Morrissey, the editor-in-chief of HotAir.com, Salem Property. We got a lot of people from Salem on the show. They're all fantastic. We're going to talk to Jennifer in a second. Red State is also a Salem media property, too. He's going to be on Tuesday. Wednesday, Albert Rosales. Now, Albert has written 15 books on the topics of what he calls humanoid creatures. So these are anything that looks kind of human but isn't. That includes gray aliens, Bigfoot, Yeti, ghosts, whatever you want to put in that category. He's written 15 books on this topic. He's definitely an expert. We're going to talk to him. That's going to be interesting. And on Thursday, Mark Mercell, who was named by the Bigfoot Times as the Bigfoot Hunter of the Year, he's coming on Thursday. And I had to make an executive decision today. We're going to cancel Monday's show, mostly because the weather looks like it's going to be relatively decent for here. Relative is a relative term. I mean, right now, what is it? It's 6 degrees outside. So it's going to be actually above freezing on Monday, and we're going to go see my mother in southern Minnesota. So that's basically an all-day trip. So I made the decision this afternoon because we're not going to have many good days of weather here, so, and we don't have a guest book for Monday night, so I'm canceling Monday's show. So anyway, so I want to thank Brittany Shears from Northeast Minneapolis for cutting my hair today. She did, look how beautiful I look. Look. She makes me look young and fetching. It's like pretty amazing. Yeah, I got to thank her for that. We had a good time. Always pleasure talking to her, too. You know, isn't it amazing? You sit in your hairstylist chair. You talk to this person for about 2 hours once a month. And a lot of times, that's more than you talk to like your friends, you know? Brittany's been cutting my hair now for about 12, 13 years now. And so I know Brittany very well. Matter of fact, I go over to her house for parties and stuff. It's like, it's very nice. Very nice. So she does excellent work, and I want to thank her once again for that. And first of all, and also, if you now, so you see the number on the bottom of the screen here. We're not going to take any video phone calls tonight. Because too many people on the screen, too much going on. But now we're taking text messages in real time. So if you want to text me, hold on a second, I got to bring the screen up. If you want to text me at 408-458-5088, and if you have questions for Jennifer or Jeff, please, send them in. Yeah, well, we'll read them in real time. So they're live. So, I don't know. Jeff's mostly live, I guess. He is alive, I think. So, okay, before we go on to them, I want to bring up something that we had David Strom on the show last night. Him and I go on way, way too long. It was one of the two longest shows we've ever done, if I'm right. It was over 100 minutes. So, yeah, blah, 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 blah. But we brought up something. We talked about something last night that he ended up writing a column about today. And that is the demonetization of shit by Google and YouTube and all this sort of stuff. I mean, so what he brought up is that, and it'll be interesting talking to Jennifer about this too. She works for Salem, for Red State is also Salem Media Property, and they share a paywall, all six of them. They go onto the banner of townhallmedia.com, if I'm right. So you can buy a subscription, and I highly recommend you do, because they need your support. Excellent journalism. Seriously, I'm going to have 4 people on from Salem Media Properties. I mean, Christ, you know, and they're not here because they're shabby, man. I don't, you know, it's like, you know, we may be a D-list show, but we go for the A-list guests, man. I'm shameless. So he was bringing up the fact that basically if he wrote a piece that he thought was, he or his employers, the editors there, thought was going to be demonetized by Google, they would put it behind the paywall, because then it's not really, it doesn't matter whether it's demonetized or not, and you have to pay to see it. Okay, fine. So now, I can't remember if I brought this up during the interview or not. All right, this is our 73rd show here. We've been doing this just over 5 months. In 5 months, in 73 shows, we've already been flagged by YouTube 3 times for misinformation. Twice for climate change shit, and once for January 6th stuff. Although, I gotta admit, I did not go back and actually look what in that show, and that was a show where Jeff Meyer from Conk came on alone. He comes on once a month alone, and they're our sponsor. And I forgot to mention that. Yeah, this is sponsored by Conk News, our shows, and I will show you the Conk front page in a few minutes before we go on to the guests. So I can't remember during that conversation. I don't actually remember talking about January 6th, but I think they have algorithms and servers that plow through the audio on the videos and actually look for keywords. That's why. It's not a person that does it. They have a computer that actually does it. So, and if they find a keyword they don't like or whatever, Jan 6 or whatever, then they slap a warning on it. And so, But the reason I bring that up is because we aren't demonetized for this, because we aren't monetized. I have made a point. We're on 8 platforms, and the only platform I pay any attention to is Rumble, because I'm assuming at some point YouTube is going to cancel us. I just assume that. I mean, it happens to all sorts of people who do what we do and I do. And I'm not even having bothered to try to monetize these videos. I don't bother to do it. I don't care. Here's my attitude toward this. Fuck you. It's like, so you think that you're going to, that you're apparently now the fiat of the world, and you're going to try to tell people what they can and can't hear, you know? I mean, we're living in a different age, ladies and germs. I mean, this is like, matter of fact, Tucker Carlson put up a video on Twitter? Or I can't remember what was his paid network. I can't remember. But basically, he said a few days ago, it's not the world you grew up in, and it isn't. I mean, there's people constantly, and wait till we talk to Jennifer here in a few minutes, because I plowed through some of her recent articles on Red State, and man, some of this stuff, holy shit. I mean, and she does such excellent work. I mean, my God, I mean, the world is a better place because of her and people like her, David Strom and Jazz Shaw and Ed Morrissey and all those people. And I'm just a sounding board. So it is my pleasure to bring these people to you, the public. It is. But that said, so we were talking about this last night, and David was talking about the fact of demonetization. And my point here is we're not monetized, so it doesn't even matter. Now you're wondering, okay, how are we going to make money? We have some ideas. We do, but I'm not going to make money by running Google ads. No, I'm not going to do that. Matter of fact, I already told you, Conk News is our sponsor, and I'm going to show you their front page in just a second. Then there's one other thing that we talked about, David. This is another thing I've noticed, too. We have conversations with guests on this show. A lot of times, we're 24 hours before something that breaks through the mainstream news. And I've noticed this a lot, and it's certainly nothing we're trying to do. It just seems to be happening. The other thing we talked about last night is about the fact the vast majority, and this is borne out by surveys over and over again, roughly 90% of the mainstream media, journalists from mainstream media, are liberals. Now, the latest poll said they asked them whether they were Democrats or Republicans. 3.6 said they were Republicans. 38 and some point said they were Democrats, and then you got the vast unwashed in the middle. But as far as even the people who took the poll thought that was a lie, because first of all, there's a difference between Democrats and liberals and conservatives and Republicans. So they didn't even buy it. They didn't buy it themselves. I will tell you, 90% are liberals, 4% are conservatives, and the 6% in the middle are Buddhists or something. I don't know. They're the truly unaffiliated. They're the true independents. Okay, so you think about this, and this was Dan Gilmore wrote this article on FoxNews.com this afternoon, and he said this. He said nearly all journalists, 96.4%, have college degrees, a huge change from 1982. About the time he started his news career, when about 70% of journalism was considered a trade you could learn. And that's right. I remember that. This is, they have elevated this to some elite, mystical thing with kind of like dramatic film acting. And this is bullshit. Basically, it's not hard to learn the basics of journalism. And years ago, a whole bunch of people never had schooling at it. They just learned it through practice and basically being hired. It was a craft. And now we've gotten to the point where not all of them, not my friends, but a lot of them are elite snobs. And he ended this article saying it's no wonder why Americans have lost faith in the news media, and it will get substantially worse. And he's right, it will. It will. I just heard a thing that I was watching Katie McFarlane was just on Fox News a few minutes ago, and she said that they have figured out how the Dems are going to try to rig this election, and believe it or not, they're going to use the military. That's what she says, and that scares the crap out of me. All right, so before we go on here, I just want to show you, here's the front page. This is in real time. This is the front page of Conk News at Conk.com, and if you look, now you can't see my cursor, and I keep forgetting that. But if you look in the top of the middle column here, just in, Donald Trump reportedly to announce he will never allow central bank digital currency. Now, if you saw our show Murray was on Monday, if I'm right. So, and him and I talked about this. I have never understood. I mean, I've been dealing with Bitcoin's been around for about 17 years, if I'm right. And as soon as it turned on, I said, "Well, this is bullshit." Now, there's two reasons it's bullshit. One is obvious, but one you might not be aware of. One, it's bullshit because it doesn't. Bitcoin doesn't represent anything, unlike gold, or even like, you know, people, you know, if you talk to economists like Murray, conservative economists said we should never go off the gold standard. But the fact is, the dollar now represents a certain measure of labor, and that's fluid in the marketplace. So even in that sense, it represents something. Bitcoin doesn't represent anything. And here's the thing you might not know. They say, well, Bitcoin's both a currency and a commodity, right? Well, actually, it's neither, because there's a finite amount of Bitcoin that can be mined. Now, I'm not going to get into, because we got guests waiting, I'm not going to get into how you mine Bitcoin. You need servers and all sorts of stuff. And the thing is, the mining of Bitcoin was deliberately set up by the inventor. And this is another thing, too. Sajimoto, the guy who supposedly invented it, nobody knows who he is. It's a pseudonym, and no one knows who invented this thing. So, and the thing is, apparently that person has about $150 million worth of Bitcoin right now because the first transaction did not make it onto the blockchain. And that's well known, and he said that. So he took some Bitcoin for himself. Okay, fine. You know, he invented it. That's fine, I guess, you know. He's a very, very wealthy man wherever he is, but nobody knows who he is. But the thing is, so there's a finite amount of Bitcoin that can be mined. And when that happens, Bitcoin as a currency is over. There's the idea of the fact you have a finite amount of currency for anything is basically antithetical to the theory, the concept of currency. It actually is. So, I've been going on and on about this for 15 years about the fact that this is all bullshit. And I'm not the only person who has. Walter Buffett has. Charlie Munger has. And the whole bunch of people have said, you know, but the thing is, it keeps growing. And so at some point, you do have to wonder, maybe I'm the one full of shit. You know, it's like, I mean, if you put money into Bitcoin 15 years ago, you now are a very, very rich person. There's no doubt about that. Now, will it collapse someday? At this point, I mean, you know, you look at sociology and how things basically kind of like evolve among humans, and this thing might be a runaway train at this point. Maybe it's got to the point, there's so much momentum here that it will never crash, but it should. There's nothing to this, nothing. You know, and you look at the obvious analogy is the tulip craze in Netherlands in the 1600s. The tulips got bid up to ungodly amounts. They're flowers. And so finally somebody realized, oh my God, the emperor doesn't have any clothes, and the whole thing crashed. So anyway, so you can see this. For 75 different news sources are pumped into Conk News every 3 hours. And this front page changes every 3 hours. And it's completely free. Go to check this out at conk.com, conk.com. So we're going to play the 12-second bumper here. And we're going to, right now, Jeff Meyer has not shown up. But we're gonna put Jennifer on. So here we go. Hi, Jennifer. How you doing? Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes. You're looking lovely as always.
Good.
Your partner's not here yet. That's not like him either.
Yeah, I hope everything's all right.
So do I. I know.
It's the weather out there.
The weather is here pretty bad here. That's true. But you know, the one thing I have never commented on this, we really don't have very much snow at all. Hardly any. We have not had a major snowfall yet, which is very unusual. Now, you're in Louisiana, right?
No, Alabama.
Oh, God. I keep forgetting. I thought Alabama. I thought, no, that was wrong. That's wrong. So, okay, all right, so fine. All right. So, anyway, she's in Alabama, folks. I'm wrong. I'm full of crap. I got a bunch of stuff here I pulled off your articles that I really want to talk about. So let's just go ahead. If Je when Jeff comes, we'll just put him on. I'm gonna skip to the second part because I didn't know this at all, and this is scary as hell. And I want you to explain this to the viewers, and that is about the fact that California's AB5 law is going to go national. So what exactly is going on here? You want to explain it?
When last we spoke, I believe we talked about the failure of a Secretary of Labor, actually assistant or whatever, acting Secretary of Labor, Julie Hsu. Julie Hsu used to be the California Department of Labor. She oversaw $10 billion in unemployment fraud during the pandemic. And she failed up to the Biden administration as a deputy Secretary of Labor. And when Marty Walsh ended up, being promoted or taking a job with the NHL, she became acting Secretary of Labor, and she was up for nomination to be Secretary of Labor. Biden nominated her. Failed miserably.
Yeah.
Her hearings were awful. Smart people like Kevin Kiley and other people confronted her on all the fraud, confronted her that she only meets with unions and she doesn't meet with small business owners or independent contractors. And basically they denied that they failed to confirm her. They sent
Right.
the nomination back to Joe Biden and said, "We're not confirming her." Bad. Joe Biden said, "I don't care. I've appointed her my secretary, and he's going to nominate her again." In
Yeah, hold it. Can
the
you
meantime, she
explain
is
something to me
doing
here?
things.
So she is the she is
Sure.
technically that still the acting Secretary of Labor, right?
This is correct. Yes.
And supposedly there's a lot of people are saying that what they're doing here is unconstitutional because she's already been rejected, right? And Biden basically just gave
Correct.
the middle finger to Congress and said, "Fuck you, I'm just going to keep her," right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Well,
Yeah,
I know that's
that's the
bullshit in
case.
and of itself. I mean, I just wanted to point that
Right.
out, you know? So anyway.
Oh, yeah. And so on that basis, we already have illegitimacy going on
Yeah, right.
because as an acting Secretary of Labor, you're not supposed to have much rights to do a whole lot of things.
Right.
What she has done is created an entirely new independent contractor rule. That is scheduled to go nationwide to be enforced March 10th, 2024. Bottom line, what this rule does is it takes AB5. AB5 had this three-pronged ABC test, and basically the second one is the one that no independent contractor can get past. The second one says, "Oh, you can't be in the same business as the company you're contracting with. Otherwise, you're not an independent contractor."
Yeah, and
Hello.
that's hilarious because that's, yeah.
How many writers? You don't have a publication without writers.
Right.
Same business. Three
Yeah.
quarters of writers, journalists are independent contractors. So,
So,
and that's just one example.
well, hold it
So
before you go
this
on. So
ruling,
she
they've taken that
actually
ABC test. Sure.
Instituted this in California as a California Secretary of Labor, right?
As the California Secretary of Labor, she enforced it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's
So
been, and
the
from what I
Employment
understand,
Development Department was enforcing AB5.
it's been a disaster there, right?
Yes. And I will have a piece being published soon about just that. There's actually a institute, a center that decided to actually do a research study on actually what were the effects of AB5. Because right now all we got is anecdotal stories and lawsuits and people saying it's ruined my life. These people actually did a studied the unemployment numbers, the labor numbers to see exactly what was the effect of AB5.
All right.
That will be coming out soon, and I will be writing about it. But yeah, it's a disaster. Close to 600 professions, over 600 professions were affected by this one law.
So if it was a disaster there, why are they instituting this? What is the point of instituting it at a national level? What are they trying to accomplish?
They are trying to accomplish wiping out the middle class, wiping out small business, because really independent contractors are just solopreneurs. We're solo businesses. That's all we are. We are our own business person. And they want that wiped out. They have no control over that. They want people, they want union dues. They want people slotted into unions so that they can easily control them. And they want independence gone. They don't want you to have freedom to work as you choose.
This is almost unbelievable. So that's why they want to take it. It's almost unbelievable.
Well,
I mean,
this is, it's dystopian for sure.
Yeah. And shit. Jesus. I mean, if you accomplish anything tonight, it's just the fact you told people about this. Because I don't know. I don't think many people are aware this is going on. You know, I wasn't until I read your piece. I didn't know this was happening.
They are not, and they're deliberately making it obtuse. They are, three quarters of it is basically saying, this is why we are justifying saying you can't be an independent contractor. That's three quarters of it.
Uh-huh.
One quarter of it is those six prongs that they've come up with saying, well, if you don't meet this, you're not an independent contractor. And you have to meet this. If you don't, you're not an independent contractor. It is positively bizarre, is what it is. And it's convoluted, overly broad, just like AB5. And they've already gotten their first lawsuit filed against it. So it's going to be wrapped up in courts, so at least it won't be enforced. But should, you know, we're fighting on all sides. You've got the independent contractor rule. If, God forbid, we lose the House and the Senate in 2024 and it reverts back to Democrat control, they're going to bring up the PRO Act, which is the, you know, the Right to Organize Act, which is basically the same thing. They couldn't get the PRO Act through, and so they turned it into this independent contractor rule. If that doesn't work, they're going to do their best to try to get the PRO Act back again. As I said, it's positively dystopian. You know, it's the Hunger Games. May the odds ever be in your favor. And they're not.
So, okay, let's go on to their thing about Donald Trump being evil and when they're actually evil. All right, so about the Iowa caucuses. So now you wrote some interesting things here, and these are not loaded questions, because I gotta admit, I do not know what to think about this. And that's, when I say this, I mean Nikki Haley. So, because I don't, you know, there's, you know, basically she's come to stand for the old guard establishment, and I haven't been able to figure out if this has been foisted upon her or if she, well, I know she does to a certain extent. I know that for sure. But, like, can you explain to me, like, what is going on here? I mean, is she just a standard bearer for, like, the, you know, the old style Rhino Republicans? Is that what's going, is that what's happening?
Pretty much. She's the anointed candidate for the GOPE elite. She's all in with the Bushies. In fact, them and their friends are flying her to Houston and Dallas to meet with a bunch of very moneyed people who want to pour into her campaign. She is funded by the owner of LinkedIn, who basically gives to Democrats, supports, you know, funded Gavin Newsom's campaign.
Oh yeah, Reid Hoffman, yeah, right.
And she's basically, she's taking money to do the bidding of whoever wants her to do their bidding, but certainly not for the will of the people.
Well,
she says one thing, does another, puts her foot in her mouth 5 million times a day.
Yeah.
From, gee, I don't know why the Civil War wasn't, you know, happened.
What the fuck? I mean, it's like, you know, a 10-year-old kid can answer that question. I don't understand. Hey, I have to, but I have to ask you, do you think that she set out on a quest to be this candidate for these people, or did you just kind of fall into it? I mean, have you been following this enough to make an opinion?
You sell your soul, you know, from observational purposes as a journalist, as someone that has watched politics for a year, you make a choice to sell your soul to these people. And I believe once she got into the governorship in South Carolina, she chose to sell her soul.
Yeah.
Well. And did exactly what they wanted her to do. Talk against Donald Trump. Okay. Become Donald Trump's UN secretary and ruin things. Okay. I mean, she, you know, that is basically she does her bidder's bidding.
Uh-huh.
And gets paid handsomely for it. I mean, you know, she was on the board of Boeing and got a lot of money involved in that and involved in that mess. She, you know, suddenly had mortgages paid off and her parents' mortgage paid off and the whole nine yards. It's like, hey, when you're in your, it's probably one of those clubs. Whether she wants to be president or not, who knows? I very seriously doubt it, but she is definitely in the wings. They're keeping her in there in the event that, you know, they can take out Trump. They want somebody inserted in there, and she's it.
Yeah,
they
so
want Ron DeSantis.
Okay, let's move on to DeSantis. So I'm astonished, basically. He's kind of acting like a crybaby here. He's like astonished he lost. I mean, how could he be... You know, are you not living in the real world? I mean, this guy was 30 points ahead of you. I mean, it's like, why are you surprised? That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, he's kind of like, he's got the same problem Trump had in his first term. He's got some horrible people around him.
Uh-huh.
Just the strategies and the stuff they put out on X and the fact that the way they've run this campaign, it's been abysmal.
Well, it's funny, you know.
He was such an intentional figure.
Yeah.
And they just totally tanked that. As you said, now he just kind of comes off as a whiner.
I don't know if you saw this. Bill O'Reilly, you know, former guy from Fox News, he said on Cuomo's show about the fact that it's a worse run presidential campaign since Herbert Hoover.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Larry O'Connor, one of our Salem hosts, you know, brilliant guy, radio host, he basically said the same thing, that they're going to be studying this campaign.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, this is what you don't do.
Right, right.
When you are running a campaign. Right.
And, you know, okay.
And it's true. It's like from the beginning, whose brilliant idea was to premiere it on X?
Yeah,
we are still visual people,
right?
We are. We still love the glory and the fanfare and the presentation.
Yeah,
and there was no presentation. It was really awful.
Yeah,
it was quite abysmal. And how you start sometimes is how you finish.
Oh, that's true. Very, very true. Wise words spoken there. And you know, oh no, I forgot what I was going to say. You know, this is what happens when you're 68. This happens. You've seen me do this before. But I tell you what, I'm going to move on. But I was going to make a comment, and now it's lost me. And so of all these people, it seems to me that Vivek actually ends up looking the best. He bought out right away, got his 8%. I'm out. I'm over. You know, tells Trump, you know, you're a great guy. Trump comes and embraces him, you know. Mm-hmm. I personally, I'm curious to your opinion here. I think he's going to be president someday. I don't even know if it's going to be 28. It might even be 20 years from now. But I think, you know, I think he's got a big future in politics ahead of him, myself.
I mean, Vivek has basically sealed his... he's earned his seat in the presidential administration. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you like the guy?
Because really, that was...
What do you think yourself?
No.
No.
I think he's another plastic, sold my soul for a certain position.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
And so that, oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a manufactured candidate. I mean, he talks a good game, but, you know, when confronted on things, when asked to explain certain things, he you know, it's just
Well, if that's
all of these talks back and forth between one opinion and
if that's the case, though, he's done it pretty artfully. I mean, you know, at least compared to like DeSantis, you know, or
no,
Nikki Haley.
Well spoken.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're having technical problems here. I don't know if you're aware of that, Jennifer, but we got a delay. Anyway, I'm going to move on. You wrote another article, and I've just started to hear about this, too, about the concept of trad wives. This is just really fascinating. Do you want to explain to people what this is?
Sure. The Gen Z, and I guess some millennials, but mostly Gen Z, has latched on to a new phenomenon, a new fad called trad wives. Basically, females going back to traditional roles, but on steroids. You know, they're displaying on social media their lovely, well manicured homes, furniture in place, you know, lovely, well taken care of children, and these delicious, you know, 5-course meals that they serve their husbands.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, evocative of we're going back to traditional roles to the 1950s, because this was when people were happy and this was when things were done well. It's all artifice is what it is. No, you know, as I had this conversation with Heidi St. John, she's a Christian influencer.
Yeah, right.
Frankly, before influencers were a thing, she was it. And, you know, she's just like, yeah, you know, the dirty little secret is my cleaner is named. Seriously.
Yeah.
And nobody freaking has time to do any of that.
Right.
It's all just a paraded show. Yeah, if you've got toddlers, no, your house is not spotless.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Right. Okay. I'm sorry that Jeff isn't here, because I know he has opinions about this, because him and I have talked about this regularly. So I'm going to be a mansplainer now, and you tell me how I'm wrong, okay? So the problem with the feminist movement is that, at least in the 70s, you know, go back 50 years when I was actually young, is that it didn't leave any room for anybody to do anything else. In other words, you know, it's great if, like, you know, that you're a writer or somebody wants to be, you know, work on cancer research, some woman or something, that's fantastic. But if you don't have any sort of real calling in life, there's nothing wrong with being a housewife. There just isn't, you know. And the original feminist movement never, like, allowed for anybody to do anything. That's kind of my point, you know. So, I mean, tell me.
Right. And I think that's where the pendulum swing is happening, is that there's no satisfaction in a lot of these things, or they're trying to have it all and they can't have it all. So it's like, yes, you want to nest. You want to go back to home. You want hearth. But now it's just, again, it's a manufactured version of it, as opposed to a legitimate version of it, because life is messy.
Yeah, it is. I have a very highly accomplished
kitchen is always.
Say again. Oh man.
So pretty much that I make, and my kitchen is rarely ever clean.
Uh huh.
So it's like they're trying to create this fantasy to and Heidi made a good point. They are longing for the traditional. They're longing for some standards, but they've gone off the deep end with it.
So I never thought about this to this very second. Do you think that this is talking about longing for some stance from traditionalism? Do you think this is a broader thing about the fact there's basically no traditionalism in our society right now about anything? Do you think this is a harbinger of that?
Traditional values.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's... We have gone so far, you know, are you a man or are you a woman? Are you a furry?
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right.
Don't have children. Abort your child.
Hey, Jennifer.
You know, men who aren't men who are more effeminate than you are.
Jennifer, how do you have sex in those suits? Do you have any idea? Do you know? I don't know.
I don't even want to think about it.
I can't figure that out. I just can't. I can't figure it out. Okay.
No, just the concept of you have too much time.
That's right. That's exactly what it is.
That's the bottom line. It's just like, okay, this is someone that's just got way too much time on.
Yeah, first world problems. Yeah, for sure. And speaking of that, you have a fantastic quote in an article that I pulled out. I just love this, Jennifer. This is fantastic writing. And you're talking, the article is called "If Black Voters Had Enough." And you said, "Joe Biden ain't Abraham Lincoln and January 6th ain't Gettysburg." And you're that could not be better put. That's fantastic. Just fantastic. Thank you. Do you want to explain what you wrote about there and as far as the whole piece?
I was outraged, frankly. And again, we know Joe doesn't have three marbles rattling around in his head.
Yeah, right.
Standing on the graves of dead black people to condemn Donald Trump. He went to Emmanuel AME Church, the place where Dylan Ruth, a white supremacist, went, joined the prayer meeting, and then shot up the people in the prayer meeting, all black,
right,
for racial reasons. And Biden, to launch his 2024 campaign, is going and speaking at these places to emphasize, oh, the dangers that we have to face if we reelect Trump. How evil are you?
Yeah.
And again, using black people for your political purposes, because frankly, he's losing the black vote and he knows it.
Right.
But this ain't the way. This ain't it. It's just not going to happen.
These people are shameless. They do not seem to care at all about, I think that what I call the Nuremberg speech, where he gave that speech in September against the red background at the military academy. I think that's the single worst speech a president has ever given in the history of this country. It's like, it was just unbelievable. And not to mention, like, either those optics were deliberate or those people are so freaking incompetent, it's mind-boggling. There's one, you know, choose one.
Or both.
Yeah, or both. Right. That's right.
That competency is not known in this administration, but they deliberately make these decisions that are just tacky and awful. Just terrible.
You wrote about something else here too, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because I bring this up a lot. But you brought up an angle on this I had never thought of before, and probably should have because I'm kind of naive about the fact. And I can't remember some congressman. Oh, Chris Murphy's talking about loneliness, right? About here's the deal. He's right. There is a loneliness epidemic in the United States. That's really true. But never occurred to me ever until I read your piece is that the government should solve it. That's like, I just find that bonkers. It's like, you're going to ask the government? Yeah. It's like, the government can't even fucking charge my electric car, let alone solve loneliness. I mean, shit.
Exactly. Can't get you know, your mail on time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we looked at the DMV lately.
And the last paragraph in your piece there, you had what was basically half a dozen common sense bullet points on how to address your personal problem. You know, like you said, go to a real event, church, something, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's as simple as that. I just think that people just need to hear this stuff, but they... God's sakes, we don't need the government come stepping in on this. I mean, this is crazy.
It appalls me that we have gotten to the point where people just assume, oh, well, the government needs to fix it. Well, that's just a problem. You know, I deliberately moved to a small town.
Yeah.
We've had ice storms and snow, which is unusual for this part. So not a whole lot of plow. You know, they've done what they can to brine the roads, but we've been housebound.
Yeah.
We haven't been driving because it's too icy. They've been telling people.
Oh, did we lose you? Finally?
Stay home. Yeah. Age for people who have recently moved to this part of Alabama and all that. And People are bitching and complaining, well, the government needs to do this, and they need to do X, Y, Z, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, didn't you move here to get away from all that stuff?
Yeah.
And now you want to come here and replicate it.
Right. This is
it just amazes me. It's like, get some perspective, people. There are certain things that you do for yourself.
Yeah.
And I love, you know, this is to wrap this up, I love the families and the people who are saying, this is so fun. We get this opportunity to be with our families.
Yeah.
And to go play in the snow and enjoy the wonder of just being.
Yeah.
As opposed to running here, running there, doing this. There are people who are genuinely enjoying it and drinking it in. And then there are other people who are just moaning about, you know, that they can't go to Publix.
I think more and more people are going to end up doing what you're doing, especially because now you don't have to be in a big city. I mean, people can remote do a vast number of jobs remotely. So it's like, why live in New York when you don't have to, you know? It's like,
That was a blessing, if there could be one, out of the pandemic, is that people realize that.
Yeah,
if I'm going to be stuck at home, why should I be stuck with this homeless person outside my door?
Right. And what neighborhood in Los Angeles did you live in?
The last 2 years in California, I actually lived in Fountain Valley, California, which was a suburb in Orange County.
Yeah, right.
Before that, we lived in Pasadena. And before that, we actually lived in Los Angeles.
Well, that's really interesting because Pasadena is one of the few places in Los Angeles that kind of like isn't Los Angeles. You know, I don't know. That's what I would say myself.
Not anymore. By the time we left Pasadena, it was looking crappy just like everybody else.
Oh, that's too bad.
Homeless sitting out in front of the CVS, people doing drugs. It's infected the entire state, even the quote unquote nice part.
I'm sorry to hear that. I really am.
Yeah.
Because I always thought if I had to move back there, that would be like the primary place I'd probably aim for. And that's sorry to hear. Really, it is.
Yeah.
Hey, so I want to bring up one more thing here. This is something you've not written about, but I just want your opinion on it, and that is what's going on over in Davos, which I just find this is, you know, I guess the only thing you can say positive about this is that as a general rule, these people don't really have any power. But man, you're talking about dystopian. If they did, and if they ever get it, holy shit! It's like
they have a lot of money. And they have power to influence. And unfortunately, you got the Nikki Haley's of Generation Z and the millennials who flock to these people. I mean, Justin Trudeau came through Davos.
Yeah.
So actually, Nikki is connected to Davos. You know, they come up with these leadership institutes. What's her name? The Jacinda something or another, that she used to be the former prime minister of New Zealand. She was all wrapped up in Davos. And they influence these people, and they take what they learn in Davos and then infect the world with it.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, you know, don't think, isn't that nice? Those people are over there meeting. No, they're meeting, and then they're finding insidious ways to implement it into our system. Half of the health directors, I bet you dollars to donuts, know somebody or are connected to the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
I'm positive, because the whole lockdown and all of that philosophy, straight out of their playbook.
I find Klaus Schwab, a stupid, nerdy guy who in any other, you know, probably be like a middle manager in some company, somehow ended up becoming president of the world. You're right. It's not funny. I just laugh as a defensive measure. What's going on? It's terrible. But yeah, it's like
it is. It is, because again, they are implementing these policies. You know, I forget what it's called. Go look at Roman Balmakov's documentary, No Farmers, No Food. He talks about it, where, you know, they want to eliminate that. They want cities, these forever cities They want to eliminate land, country, people trapped into these holes, and yeah, eating the bugs.
And I find it just amazing that, I mean, Norway's actually trying to shut down farms. I mean, that's absurd. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, I don't, you know, do I have to tell people, where do you get your food? You know, it's, but apparently we don't have to eat or something. I don't know. It's like,
no, that they want to control production. It really is a microcosm for that country of what they're trying to do with the independent contractor rule to bring it full circle. They want to break independence. They want to break any concept that, oh, you own something, you have the freedom to pursue your dreams. No, you don't. We want you to pursue what we want you to pursue, to be locked into this pay wage, and we want you dependent on us. We don't want you self-reliant.
Jennifer, I don't know if you ever heard this. Chris Rock has a fantastic joke about that. He said he took his daughter to orientation at her high school, and he said the assistant principal gets on stage, and she says, I just want to tell all you kids you can do anything you want in life. Chris says, no, no, four of you can do anything you want. The rest of you better learn welding pretty damn quick. Yeah, but, it's kind of the thing. It's like, I don't know.
That's the thing.
I love that guy. Hey, Jennifer, I don't know what the hell happened to Jeff. I mean, I'm going to have to give him a call and make sure he's okay or something. So,
yeah. Definitely we need to check in on him.
What do you have on tap for the next couple of weeks? Do you know? Are you writing anything interesting, or can you tell us ahead of time? Or?
As I said, I'll be writing about that study, quantifying the effects of AB5 in California. I will be writing about how the CDC drafted a letter in 2021 or an email saying that there was a connection between the mRNA vaccine and myocarditis, and oops, they forgot to send it.
Oh my God. Unbelievable. Yes, so, shocking.
Yeah. Epoch Times broke it. So I'll be, parsing that a little bit, and definitely more on the independent contractor rule, more on New Hampshire's coming up. Well, 2024. The fact of that MSNBC and CNN refuse to let the winner of Iowa speak.
Oh, unbelievable.
It's like, we don't need to listen to him.
No,
We have a policy. We'll tell you what the truth is.
Right,
we'll
right.
tell you whether there's anything newsworthy or relevant.
Rachel Maddow says, we really thought about this really hard, but we can't put lies on our network. Oh, bullshit. It's like, Jesus Christ.
The Miss Russia collusion.
Yeah, really. I know. No, but no lies. No.
You'll be hearing about that in, 18-19 news. I'll be doing a little op-ed on that.
Yeah.
It's like we have an entire primary season. Barring conviction, Trump is probably going to sweep the floor in most of the nation.
Yeah. Okay. But, all right.
That is allowing him on the ballot.
In closing.
So what? Every time he has a winning speech, you're not going to air it?
Yeah. Tell me this though, Jennifer.
What kind of news organization are you?
Right now, it appears that he's going to run away with the election even. Unless, there seems to be significant polling that if he's convicted, a lot of people wouldn't vote for him. Do you think that's true?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
I seriously think people are just hella fed up.
Yeah,
on so many levels with this gaslighting administration and all of their evil policies, and they are evil. You deliberately destroy people's livelihoods, people's outlook. Want to mutilate their children? You're evil.
Yeah,
and people are fed up. There are people who are vocal about it. There are others that are not.
And more and more people seem to see through it every day.
Yeah.
And that's
see through it every day. And this time they're actually planning on doing something about it as opposed to laying down.
And that's
because they're at least starting to wake up and realize, you know what? Tomorrow this could be me. This
right.
is just getting buried.
And that's where what you do is so important. It's like, you know, we aren't the mainstream media, but collectively we just keep pounding and pounding and pounding, and people seem to kind of start to look around and actually kind of get a clue a little bit, you know? So
yeah,
I just keep it up. That's the reason I bring that up, you know?
Honest to God,
can't thank you enough. Not just for being on the show, for writing this stuff. It's like, I can't. On behalf of the public, thank you, dear. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Jim. Always great to see you.
So we'll talk to you next month, okay? You take care, all right?
Yep.
We'll see you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Jeff Meyer didn't show up, and that's not like him. I do have to call him because I can't remember. I mean, I've been working with him for years. I can't remember him ever doing anything like this, so I hope he's okay. And, you know, I'm bitching him about the weather constantly, but it is really true, and I think I mentioned this a couple days ago, and it's still true. We don't really have any real snow here. I mean, that's the real unusual thing. I mean, it's been below zero, but I call it Hogan's Hero Snow. Because I don't know if you guys ever watched that sitcom that was done in 1965. And it's hard to believe it was only 20 years after the Second World War. But they made a conscious decision during that show because they did not know what order the episodes were going to be played in on television. So the entire show takes place during the winter. So there's dusties of snow all over the place. And, you know, that it's a permanent part of the set. And that's kind of what it looks like here in Minneapolis right now. We have dustings of snow everywhere, but no real snow. So the reason I brought that up is because I don't think Jeff's stuck anywhere. You know, right now we have not really not had a problem with driving because we have not really had any snow. So, but it has been cold. Matter of fact, right now, it's according to my monitor here, it's 6 degrees outside. So I think I have one more thing I want to run by before we end up tonight. I do want to plug this again. We got Stan or Gordon coming on tomorrow night. Big time UFO researcher. Really looking forward to talking to him. So, okay. So what I wanted to bring up is the fact that it appears that King Charles of Britain had a surgery for an enlarged prostate. Just. I don't know why that amuses me. It just does because he's the king. I don't know. It's like, you know, apparently not can't pee. The king can't pee or something. You know, just a lot of jokes there, and I'm writing them in my head. Yeah, it's like it's not funny. You know, I mean, I got the same problem. Here's my problem. Like you want to hear it, but I'm going to tell you anyway. And that is, it's not so much that a lot of guys my age, they think they get this feeling they have to pee, but then they can't. That's not my problem. I'm peeing constantly. I don't know. It's like I got to wake up 6-7 times a night and I'm peeing. It's not just, I'm not just sitting there waiting for it to happen. It's like, I don't know. I drink too much iced tea or something. That's kind of my drink of choice. So, and in the winter, hot tea too. I like the tea. And do you care? I don't want to blame you a bit for not caring at all. So tomorrow night, Stan Gordon. Next week, hold on. I got to look. Next week, Ed Morrissey on Tuesday, Albert Rosales on Wednesday, Mark Marcel on Thursday. We're taking Monday off so I can go visit my mom. Maybe we'll have her back on the show here. She never did video, and that's because in the small town she lives in, my relatives won't help me out. They won't put her in front of the video camera. Last time we talked to her on the phone. And I have to say, we're talking to Stan Gordon on the phone tomorrow, too. Not the most optimum thing, but, you know, this is a TV show, and there is a picture. So I don't necessarily like to do audio only, but to accommodate him, absolutely. Because I got a lot of questions. You know, he told me two things, even just setting up the interview, that I did not know. And that is, there's a guy who, program director at the local radio station in Kecksburg named John Hughes. And see, you guys don't, you know, if you got to go back 60 years, in the 1960s, even on a local level, radio was still a big deal. You know, if you had a radio station in your town, that was still a big deal. And they did. And he was, and so John Hughes put together apparently a documentary to play at the radio station about what really happened. And apparently he knew, and it was in the documentary, and he got visited by some government agents and he took it out. So all the incriminating stuff. Apparently, he was threatened. That's what it appears. And then 4 years later, in 1969, and people said his personality changed remarkably after that. He was very sullen, kind of depressed. 4 years later, he decided he had a change of heart. He said, oh, screw it. I'm going to run the documentary the way it was anyway, the original one. And shortly after that, he got in a car accident and died. So the documentary was never aired, ever. Yeah, but the reason I bring that up is because the assumption is, if you know the mythology of these stories, is that Stan Gordon and John Hughes knew each other. And he told me, no, they didn't. So I'm actually looking forward to talking to him about that. He said he did not know John Hughes. So, yeah. And also, he also told me that he does not think, based on what he knows, that that car accident was any sort of covert operation. He thinks he really did have a car accident. So, anyway, well, I'm looking forward to a lot of questions that I'll talk about. That's tomorrow night. So, you know, same time, same bat channel. I recommend Rumble. But, you know, we're at 8 places. You go to Geminite.com. There's a page there, first one on the menu called Watch. And that's all the places you can see the show. There's one place, Spreaker Live, where it's audio only. And I do that because of my romantic fascination with podcasting. But, you know, it's occurred to me, if you're in your car and you want to just listen to the audio of this, you're probably going to bring up YouTube or Rumble anyway and just play the video and listen, you know. So I don't know, whatever, but we're doing it. So you can listen to this on Spreaker Live. You need the Spreaker app. And there's no warning. We just go live at 2 minutes after 11 p.m. Eastern, whatever that is, on the live portion of that app. And then it's immediately turned into an on-demand podcast after that. So that's what we got going on. So anyway, I want to thank you, folks. As always, thanks for watching. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. We'll see you tomorrow night.